Good evening, everybody. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, May 9th, 2016. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern till midnight. If you're listening over another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, our call in number is 605-562-3140, and our participant code is 385-698. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send questions, that's plural, questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. You can find their banners on our right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save America. And, of course, please don't forget, everybody should be donating $5 a month or more for the cause to keep things going. We got a lot of bills and a lot of mailing going out these days, and it's just really hard to keep up. So anybody who's not participating in that, please consider $5 a month or more. I think what we're doing is worth it. Before we move, I guess let's talk a little bit about what we've been working on this past weekend particularly. We've been working on the committees of safety, trying to put together, and we've accomplished the putting together of a page. You can find it up on the top blue bar. It says committees of safety, all the way in the far right, second from the last. And the URL is nationallibertyalliance.org/COS for Committee of Safety, COS. We did do a video. It is a PowerPoint video. Anybody wants to view that? The two things we did. You can go up to our page, and you can cut and paste the URL that you'll find there. For YouTube. That'll take you to the page on YouTube where it's at, so you can see it if you want later this evening on YouTube. Or you can come down a little further and you can download a copy of this Committee of Safety PowerPoint video. Just click on right below the Committee of Safety PowerPoint video, COS Presentation 2016. Just click on that. You should get a pop-up. Do you want to save it? Do you want to open it and save it to your computer? And you will have the WMV. It'll play on any Windows media. It'll play on the Windows. Also, the key purpose of this presentation is not only to get people to really view this. We really want to get a movement going at this point. Committees of Safety is the key to organize America. It's the grassroots connection. And after watching the video, I think everybody will get the gist of this and how this is so important. As a matter of fact, I was very surprised to find out that there were so many committees of safeties back in the 1770s during the creation of our nation. All of our founding fathers belonged to committees of safeties. That's how they connected. That's how they were communicating. They were sharing the ideas of liberty. They were sharing the ideas of a republic as they were preparing and deciding on going forward with the revolution and to break ties from Britain. And so this was a huge tool for them, and it can be a huge tool for us. We've been talking a little bit about, or we've been hearing talk a little bit about, the committees of correspondence. Now, each and every committee of safety should, at some point in time, once they establish themselves and they get around to it, they should establish themselves a subcommittee called the Committee of Correspondence. We're going to put a lot of information on this page concerning different things. We found some documents on history. We put them up there, Committee of Safety, Volumes 1 and 2. Also some historical documents pertaining to the Committee of Safety. We put that up there. We noticed that where we got some of our information from, that they had people were taking oaths. We don't require anything, but we did put a vow up there, a very simple one. People might want to use that. And, of course, if they did decide to use that vow, they would want to deliver that to the secretary of their committee. It has nothing to do with us on the National Liberty and National Liberty Alliance side of things. But we do want to deliver our principles. We want people to realize that they need to go forward with a sense of honor, justice, and mercy. I have discovered that in history there have been people who have abused the Committee of Safety. But generally speaking, for the most part, it has been a savior to communities. And you always get people who will destroy things that are good, make a weapon out of things that are good. And if we have to deal with that evil, it is what it is. But in any event, we need to use it for the good. We need to use it to bring our community together, to prepare for emergencies, to prepare communications. And as we were putting this together, it really dawned on us on how powerful, powerful this Committee of Safety is. Everyone should belong to a Committee of Safety in your county. We should advocate the idea of getting one started. We may not want to take on leadership levels, or we may want to. It's up to you. It is not a conflict of interest to be a member with us, to be with the grand jury, or to be an administrator, or any of those things. You can be all those things and still be a leader in the Committee of Safety. If you have that kind of time, that's good. That's good. I do intend on taking this myself to numerous liberty groups in my neighborhood, in my county, and the surrounding counties around me, and passing it around throughout New York, and encouraging people to execute this kind of an idea and communicate with each other. And I do intend on becoming active and attending all of the meetings within my own county. I don't think that I'm going to take a leadership role because I'm just too busy working where we're working now, but I definitely will participate and want to be prepared for the emergencies that we know are heading our way. It's only a matter of time. A lot of talk, it's going to happen this year. I've even heard a lot of talk that's going to happen August, but we have been hearing this for years, so we really don't know. But it could happen tomorrow, so we better get ready. But the Committee of Correspondence is an extremely important part of this whole thing. This is the place or where this committee can communicate not only to the people of their community, you know, to get the message out, to prepare them for potential emergencies. Even if they don't get kind of involved, they need to participate and be aware of it. And in the times of emergency, they'll know where to go and what to do, and they'll be given some necessary jobs to keep the community going. Because when things fall apart, and I think they probably will fall apart relatively soon, when that happens, you're not going to have a job or anything where you'll be going to collect some kind of a paycheck or anything of that nature, but you will indeed have the opportunity, if committees of safety have been executed within your county, a place to go, participate in volunteering in any way you can, whatever your specialty is or expertise is, or even just being a laborer, to do whatever is necessary to keep the community going, to keep it afloat, to make sure that there are emergency services, that the sheriff is in charge during an emergency, and no federal agency, and nobody else, the sheriff alone. And of course, he should be working with the militia. He's got the power of posse comitatus, and ultimately the militia is us. Anyone, we've heard different ages, but we do know that there is some codes out there that say or suggest between the ages of 18 and 45. I say anybody that could do anything, no matter how young or no matter how old, should be part of the militia. Of course, very young people, very old people may have a problem in defending, but there's a lot of things we can all do. So anyway, this is logic. People work that out themselves on their own level. But we're going to list the liberty groups particularly know a lot of what's going on. They've become frustrated with Agenda 21, Common Core, and all that other garbage that they've been putting out to us. They know that something has to be done with that. And this gives them the opportunity to have some power, some authority, some clout. If they set this up right, then we're going to teach them everything that we possibly can on how to do these things. It's up to them to discover what's necessary to be done in their communities and how they want to approach it. But we will endeavor to give them all the necessary tools and advice and information necessary. And I'm sure, they'll collect information, they'll share it with us, and we'll post it, and we'll just post all kinds of stuff up here that people would need to, use and really execute in their own neighborhoods. But getting back to this Committee of Correspondence, which we're going to write a paper on, and we'll post it up here on this page, on the Committee of Safety page here on nationallibertyalliance.org. Getting back to the correspondence part, not only is it to correspond, to communicate with the people within your county, to make them aware of the preparations and for emergency possibilities and so on, but also to communicate with the counties around them. And if there is no Committee of Safety in their sister counties, they should visit the Liberty groups or any other kind of a group to suggest, to show them the video, get them interested, suggest they come up onto the website to learn more, and to get one going in their community. Anybody that realizes that we live in very troubled times and extraordinary times, when they see this video, in my opinion, I think will act immediately. We believe, because we are pretty well settled in every state of the union, and we're reaching down into many, many counties throughout the United States. So we do have a presence, and when we push this down through our membership to really take a look at this thing and get involved on their level, we think we can spread this Committee of Safety to reach and get activated in almost every county in the nation before 2016 is out. I'd like it to see before the next few months are out. Of course, that may be really unrealistic, but who knows? Look, if we could make this go viral and people understand this and they start to connect, you know, not only with sharing the assets of their counties during emergencies, backing each other up from one county to a county all the way across the state and even from state to state through emergencies, there's nothing that the New World Order can throw at us that will be able to succeed against us if we, the people, become united in preparation for potential emergencies. You know, making sure we have food, making sure we have electricity and water, making sure that, there are doctors and there are dentists and there are carpenters and people of all the different trades that do the necessary work to keep the county going. There are farmers and so on. And the people need to work this out, and we're going to talk, like I said, we're going to write some papers and some ideas on this. Not only does the Committee of Safety want to work this out, one of the first things they want to do after they establish themselves and set a few things up is they're going to want to connect with their sheriff and partnership with their sheriff concerning these concerns that we, the people in our communities, have. And once you get the sheriff on board and things are working out and you're starting to build and start to write resolutions and deal with the problems in the towns and in the different cities and villages, for instance, here in New York, in Dutchess County, which is the county I live in, if my memory recalls, we have 19 towns and villages here in Dutchess County, and we have two cities, so that's 21 different communities. But we would want to communicate with all 21 of these different communities. We would want to make sure, to the best of our ability, we'd have some people from each of these communities in the Committee of Safety working together. The committee man is set up in the same way, by the way. But this is really the people focusing in on emergency services, emergency concerns, defense, and so on. And, so we want to get the towns involved in this at some point in time once the organization gets well moving along. And remember, when the times of emergencies comes, we're all going to know each other. We're going to understand, that we're working together and we plan for this. And it may very well prevent that really big emergency from coming down the pike. But clearly, if we can organize quick enough, surely we could prevent anything they can throw at us, anything. We will survive and we will go forward and continue. We will hold on to liberty and maintain it. So anyway, everybody needs to get into this game here. Everybody needs to get involved. Everybody needs to get the message out. We need to get the YouTube viral. We need to get our website on the Committee of Safety viral. We're offering people the free education just like we offer anyone else. They can come up and they can take our civics course, they can take a constitutional course, they can look at all the educational material that we have, and they can also make use of the common law grand jury when they have some kind of a clash with any particular agency or a town that really is just not obeying the law and they can't get common sense into these people, then maybe we can do something about that. But so anyway, this is an important thing. We're going to be throwing up there Robert's Rules of Order. This page was just put up, I put the page up a couple of days ago, but nothing was on it until today. And so we threw a bunch of things up there that we've been working on. We'll be putting the Robert's Rules of Orders up there. We're going to put a suggested plan for every county. And, you know, counties will, people will do what they want to do. But also at some point, people have to acclimate to each other. You know, someone is doing something in metrics and we're doing something in inches and feet. You know, there's a clash in communication. So eventually that'll acclimate out and people will deal with one or the other. So that's the point of putting out a proposed plan that maybe we can kind of all do things in a certain way that allows us to really interconnect in a very intimate way and acclimate between the different counties and the states throughout the union. So this is extremely important for survival. I got to believe every person hearing my voice at this point in time agrees that this is priority number one. Now, of course, there is a benefit from this because National Liberty Alliance, of course, will benefit from this from getting a lot of traffic on and we'll get people who will be looking into the other things that we're doing and start participating in other areas and we can grow a lot quicker. As far as through the administrations, you know, we need over 15,000 people across the nation, four in each county to become administrators. And that, too, is a grassroots work. And that also is something that National Liberty Alliance is not going to try to take any control of in any way, shape, or form. We are just going to deliver the tools, deliver the education. We will do our duty to deliver to them the principles, and everything that they need, all the necessary things. So it's up to the people to really take it and run with it. And I think it could explode, and I think it can explode extremely quickly. Okay, I don't have much more to say about this, but I think when we get the plan, we might read the plan next week. Over the air, I'm not sure. It depends on what else is going on. We've got so many things happening. But the plan will go up this week anyway, a suggested plan for how the counties might want to proceed and set things up so that we are compatible in ways and ideas, you know, things, you know, first order of business. We'll suggest things, you know, communicate with the sheriff, you know, get a resolution of what you are all about. Define the problems within your county. Define the problems within the towns and the villages within your county and the cities within your county. And propose resolutions for these things. You know, this is what we all need to do. So, and it's just a standard thing. Again, we have historical documents up there. I haven't looked through all of them, and I haven't read through all the papers yet either that we've dug up on this stuff, but I have breezed through a lot of it, and a lot of good stuff in there. And I'm sure people will get a lot of great ideas. And when a group of people get a great ideas, what do they want to do with it? They're going to want to share a great idea, and we most definitely will post any great idea that any other group on a grassroots level comes up with that is doing, and we'll suggest that others might want to do the same thing. Okay, so anyway, that's set aside. Anybody wants any questions on that, you know, when we get into Q&A, you can pipe in on that. Let's see, Gary, do we have any questions from the mail?
Actually, yes. What I'd like to do is ask Richard Walbaum, our Common Law Advisory Committee chairman, to please do *6 to unmute himself, that he had some questions that he'd like to address. Richard, you're
going to
have
to find him to unmute him. Let's go to Q&A.
No, wait.
I'm in lecture, so you can't unmute himself.
Oh. Lectures.
Yeah. So now he can. Now he can go into star six and get into the
Q&A. Does he end in 4884?
I don't know.
I'll unmute him to see.
Oh, well, now he can hit the star six and get into the Q&A.
All right, I guess he's not online. Okay. I guess we can go on, John, and proceed.
Okay, let me clear the queue for now, then. Let me just go. So we don't get into the queue right now, because we're going to move on over to now to Brent. Brent, are you here? Star 6 to unmute yourself. You're on the panel, so you should be able to do that.
I'm here.
Okay. All right, I want to just introduce Brent Winters. He's the author of Excellence in Common Law. His website is commonlawyer.com. Brent has been visiting with us and teaching us for quite a few weeks now. The last couple of weeks, he's been talking on the militia, and I think we're going to be doing part three on the militia. Is that correct? Or do you have something else?
No, we're going to continue with that. That's what I want to do. That's
absolutely
all right.
Yep, I like that. So Brent is going to continue on militia. This will be part three. So we'll pass the mic over to Brent. Brent, go right ahead.
Thanks. And I say again, as I'd said before, that we do live in a time of lawlessness in high places. And the only remedy for lawlessness is law. And so it behooves us to learn the first principles of our common law, for that's the law under which we live, and it is the fellowship that Americans have that comes all of us, and our common law tradition that distinguishes us from all of the rest of the world. And we are more, as some people say, as far as our legal tradition goes, and our courts, more English than the English themselves, because they have departed significantly from our common law tradition, although they're still common law countries. We're talking about the militia of the several states, more particularly the four militia clauses of the United States Constitution. I was refreshed to learn in my home county. I was talking to a friend, and he was showing me some things he had, survival gear particularly. And I said, well, where'd you get this, and who gave you that, and who came up with this? And it's not a highly populated county, so I know some of the people around. And I said, where'd you get this particular thing? He said, well, that's Judge so-and-so. He had gotten that, and he passed them around. Well, I found out that one of the retired judges there at home is a member of a group there in the county. They don't call themselves a committee of safety, but all of their characteristics are the same. They want to be in place and contribute what they, each one of them, uniquely know or can do to helping themselves and others in case things fall apart. And I'm firmly convinced that when things fall apart, we here in America will pick up the pieces locally and we'll move forward and things will stay put back together pretty quick. I really believe that. It happened during our war with Britain because we had the colonies in place with governments in place, and those governments just kept going. Our experience has not been one to throw off everything in the past, throw it away, and then not know what to do next. No, we know what to do next. We have our principles, our common law principles of our United States Constitution. We're all somewhat familiar with them, even though we don't always know particularly maybe all the details about the principles of our Constitution, but many of us are familiar just by osmosis of understanding some fundamental rights. And one of those is the Fourth Militia Clause. It's been in the news for many decades. The Fourth Militia Clause, of the three militia clauses of our Constitution, is the only one that delegates nothing. It simply recognizes and protects a fundamental God, that means God given direct to the individual, fundamental right to protect oneself, and that's the Second Amendment. We call it the Second Amendment. It's the fourth of the four militia clauses of our U.S. Constitution. And our Constitution's plan is simple. It is this: the four militia clauses bestow four different sets of duties on four separate jurisdictions of persons. Namely, number one, the Congress of the United States has a particular duty our Constitution delegates to Congress. The state legislatures and the governors of each state, our militia clauses delegate a particular set of duties respecting the militia of that particular state to that group of people. The third group, of which our militia clauses concern, are presidents of the United States. Presidents of the United States have a certain particular duty respecting the militia clauses, the four of them, of our U.S. Constitution. And then the fourth class of people are the people of the United States. That's the way our Constitution puts it in the preamble. And we discover, reading documents from that time in history and before, that the people, that phrase, the people, is the militia. It is the militia. And the militia is a modern term in old common law England. It was called the Fyrd, F-Y-R-D, related to the old Germanic word Fred and Frederick. But the Fyrd is the militia. And now we call it the militia, also the people. And the two duties of the militia are to defend against enemies, foreign, by force of arms if necessary. That's why we have the Second Amendment. That's the first duty. The second duty is to defend our law against enemies, domestic, foreign and domestic. And that means be willing to serve on a jury and defend another man's rights, his fundamental rights of life, liberty, or property. And anyone who's willing to do that, when you defend one man's rights in court, when you say no to the government, no, you cannot take this man's life, liberty, or property, or a combination thereof. Or yes, you may. That's what a juryman does. He's defending against enemies, domestic, and know well. Enemies domestic is primarily, in that case, and always, the powers that be. The powers that be, to use William Tyndale's old phrase from the Bible. The most powerful party, they're the dangerous one, and in our country it always is the government. So that's the origin of that phrase, enemies foreign and domestic, which is part of our oath. Now never forget, majesty in America is of law and not of any man or men or even a woman. It's not any of those things or a combination of such persons. Majesty is of law. Thus it is said that America's government is one of law and not of men. And the American patriot's loyalty is not to any faceless cluster of bureaucrats called the United States. Let me repeat that. Our loyalty is not to be, as patriots, to any faceless cluster of bureaucrats called the United States, but our loyalty as Americans is to the common law first principles that our Constitution lays down, our Constitution calling these the law of the land, an old phrase taken from Magna Carta that means due process. Due process. And due process is our common law, period. That's what it is. It's not a result-oriented tradition like the law of the city. We must achieve this result. Well, what's the result? That the law of the city, the law of Rome, as it is called today, what is the result it must achieve? It must achieve the will of the powerful party, the powers that be, the government, the state. Well, no, our common law tradition doesn't say that. Our common law tradition says that one must follow the process that is due. Forget the result. If you follow the process that is due, the result will be good and just. and we'll trust it. And by the way, God himself says he'll ratify it. One zeal for our Constitution of the United States will defend it against its enemies, both foreign and of greater danger, domestic. And the Second Amendment, the fourth of the four militia clauses, is the only one that is upheld and has not been forgotten. And that class of people, called the people of the several states, have kept themselves in America substantially armed. They've done their duty. It is that class of persons called the president, that class of persons, the president, presidents, that class of persons called congressmen, that class of persons called state governors and legislators, none of those have done their job under our Constitution for about 175 years. Well, beware. That means be wary, be careful. Our Constitution's enemies among us talk of, quote, enemies of the state, closed quote, enemies of the state. That's what they talk about. Or sometimes they talk of a government or government in general instead of enemies of our Constitution. And when they do this, they take focus off of themselves. And they replace our Constitution's limits for government with the will of bureaucrats. It's easy to talk about the government. It's easy to talk about the United States. It's easy to talk about a corporate faceless something. But that's not the problem. The problem are men whose hearts are evil, and they just don't care anymore. They've just gotten too used to it. And that's where the problem lies. And if they aren't limited by law, then we live under tyranny. What is tyranny? It is the government of a tyrant or tyrants. What are tyrants? It's an old word, an old Norse word that refers to the old Norse god Tu. Our day Tuesday is named after this old Norse god. And he was a terrible god in that he not only made law, he interpreted it and applied it and enforced it. All three branches of government and one man. Well, that's occurred in history a lot, but in among the Nordic people, it was Tu. Now, some people say his name was Tau, but he was a tyrant. There have been many since, and we don't want them to be here in America. A tyrant is a man or a combination of men who reduce their wills to a single will, or if it's one man, just one will, and he combines and gathers into his hands or their hands, such as a legislative body, all of the three powers of government, the legislative, executive, and judicial. You see, there is no separation of powers. And by the way, the doctrine we call separation of powers, of which our Constitution adheres very tightly, is a teaching of our common law. It does not exist by necessity anywhere else in the world except in common law countries. Well, how many militia clauses? There are four. There are four. And I want to go through them here briefly because we haven't done that. I've talked a lot about them. The first militia clause says this. I'm going to read it. By the way, it's Article 1, Section 8, Clauses 15 through 16. Article 1, Section 8, Clauses 15 through 16. The first militia clause of our U.S. Constitution says this. The Congress shall have the power to provide for calling forth the militia to execute the laws of the Union, suppress insurrections, and repel invasions. To provide for organizing, arming, and disciplining the militia and for governing such part of them as may be employed in the service of the United States. Now, that's the longest of the four militia clauses. It's a mouthful, but it's simple. But amazingly, though it is simple, it is precise. The jurisdiction of Congress respecting the militia of the several states is precise. The scope of it, the lines are drawn clearly. Congress has the power to provide. Watch the verbs. That's how you interpret statutes, writings of legal significance, such as our Constitution. Watch the verbs. Congress has the power to provide. That means that's the limit. That's the definition of what they do. They provide what? They provide for calling forth the militia. Okay, got it. Do they call forth the militia? No, doesn't say they call the militia. In fact, they don't. It is important when you're reading writings of legal significance, such as the U.S. Constitution, that you pay even closer attention, not to what it says, but what it does not say. It does not say Congress has the power, for example, to call forth the militia, but it does say Congress has the duty to provide for the calling forth, and we'll talk more about what that means in just a minute, Lord willing. And these are the only reasons our Constitution gives allowing the calling forth of the militia. What are those reasons? Here they are right here, just a few. Number one, to execute the laws of the Union. Number two, to suppress insurrections and to repel invasions. Number three, to provide for organizing, arming, disciplining the militia, and for governing such part of them as may be employed in the service of the United States. Notice again, it does not say that Congress has the authority to govern the militia, to discipline the militia, to arm the militia, to organize the militia. No, it doesn't say any of that. What it says is this: it has authority to provide for the organizing, arming, disciplining the militia. Watch the verbs, you see. To govern, to provide for the governance. You see, Congress doesn't govern the militia. Congress provides for the governance. Just as George Washington, when he got his army together in those early days, he said, we need some kind of a law for these ragtag farmers and these artisans and these fellows we got together with guns, part of the militiamen, and of course of each state. He even had bands of red men armed with, some with rifles, some with spears, some with bows, that came to the cause of the Union. Fascinating story about that. Very deadly, some of them were. But he wanted a rule that governed them all, and so he took the code of military justice. That's not what they called it, but that's what it was, from the British Army. Well, he was familiar with that code because he had served as a British Army officer. He took the references to King George out of it, and that's what they used to govern. You see, but when they did that, we could say this by analogy, that the British provided for the disciplining, our arming, organizing, of the armed forces of the United States, the militia and the Continental Army. They provided for it, but the Brits didn't have the power to enforce it. And that's what it's saying here. Congress has the power to provide. And they have the power to provide the rules, the uniform, as we just say today in America, the uniform code of military justice that all persons are under. And when the militia is called forth, by the way, according to our Constitution, they must be under that uniform code also. Congress provides it. Well, second, the second militia clause. So the first militia clause is about the duties of Congress, that class of people, representatives and senators of the several states. Second militia clause, Article 1, Section 8, Clause 16, that follows that one. The end of Clause 16. It says this: reserving to the states, respectively, the appointment of officers and the authority of training the militia according to the discipline. Here it is, prescribed by Congress. See, it acknowledges here that Congress has the authority to prescribe a particular discipline that is uniform throughout the several states, but Congress does not have the power nor the authority to enforce any of it. Reserving that, it says, to the states, each of the states separately, severally, and respectively, the authority of training the militia according to the discipline Congress has provided in military discipline is provided in writing. As I said today, we call that the particular body of law that has been put in place for that purpose, the Uniform Code of Military Justice. So that's the second militia clause. The first militia clause concerns the duties of Congress. The second militia clause concerns the duties of the states, and that comes down to the legislature and the governor of each state. And only the states, it says here, has the authority to appoint officers of the United States, the Congress, the president. None of those people have authority to appoint officers. Very important. The power of appointment of officers belongs at the local level, at the states, at the state level. So the Congress, the states, third militia clause concerns that class of persons called presidents, plural presidents of the United States. Says this, Article 2, Section 2, Clause 1. That's the part of our Constitution that concerns the executive branch, the presidents. Article 2, the third militia clause says this, that the president shall be commander-in-chief of the militia of the several states when called into the actual service of the United States. Allow me to read it again. The president, that is of the United States, of course, shall be commander-in-chief, important phrase, commander-in-chief, of the militia of the several states when called into the actual service of the United States. Well, he's only commander-in-chief of the militia of the several states, or any part of the militia of the several states, only when called into actual service of the United States. You see, at any other time, which would be most of the time, the militia of the several states could be under the authority of the governor of each of the respective states. The governor. In fact, it is understood, has always been understood, and this is the logical conclusion, the one that one must reach by one-step inference, and all of Americans that have contemplated the question have agreed, everybody from Justice Marshall and Justice Story right on up to the present, that the President of the United States at any given time has what's called concurrent jurisdiction, if he wants to take it, over the militia of the several states with the governor of each state. Concurrent jurisdiction. That means this, to put the rubber on the road. That means that depending on who first calls out the militia, the president of the United States or the governor of a state, that person has authority over that part of the militia of each of the states. This came up in a way by principle, not concerning the militia, because the National Guard is not the militia, and our Constitution has no place in its writing any contemplation of a National Guard. But I use this example by way of showing a principle. During the days of the Civil Rights Movement, trying to establish for the first time, I guess I should say, the manhood of the American black man and the dignity of the American black woman in American society, President Eisenhower put the militia of the state of Arkansas, he called them up into service, not the militia, the National Guard called them up into service, and he did it only for one reason. He was afraid the governor would do it first. That, by principle, is the same kind of a thing, because National Guardsmen are under what we call concurrent jurisdiction. Con means with or at the same time, and current means as we go along. Both the president of the United States and the governor of each state have concurrent jurisdiction over the National Guard. So also the militia of the several states. So 1, 2, 3, Congress number one, first militia clause. Second militia clause concerns the states. Third militia clause concerns presidents. Fourth militia clause concerns the people. How do I know? Because it says so right in that clause. Listen to it and watch for the words. Watch for the words the people. It says this, many of you, no doubt, I hope, have it memorized. A well-regulated militia, being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Sounds like he's talking prophetically, whoever wrote this, the framers wrote it, prophetically, shall not be infringed. Here's how it's going to happen. This is our intention, and we should never forget that infringement is a powerful word. It means to nibble around the edges, or to nibble around the fringe. And that, friends, neighbors, and kin, is exactly what's going on and has been going on for a long time, a nibbling around the edge, nibbling, hoping to get it nibbled down to a nubbin, and then just kick it off the map and get rid of it. That's what the enemies of law, the lawless crowd, let's use that word law and lawless, lawless crowd, ugly word. Now, failure of those holding the reins of any of these four jurisdictions, Congress, states, presidents, and the people, failure of any of these holding the reins of these jurisdictions to fulfill the Constitution's charge directed to them, respecting the separate states' militia, never relieves any other of the three of these classes of people from our Constitution's charge to them. Just because the president hasn't done his job, that doesn't relieve the states, the Congress, or the people. And just because Congress has not done their job, that does not relieve the states, the presidents, or the people. And on it goes, because these responsibilities, these duties are unique, each to one, and not mutually dependent each on the other, not at all. And the people of the United States are the only ones that have taken this duty, the duty of the militia, seriously and have fulfilled their charge. It is not the responsibility of the people to establish, for instance, to establish or provide for, to use the language of the first militia clause, it's not the people's responsibility to organize armed discipline, to govern, to provide for the governments. It's their duty and a right, by the way, is an old Germanic word. I'll repeat this again. An old Germanic Anglo-Dane word, right, means duty. The German language has other words for law that mean other things, but right means fundamentally, R-I-G-H-T. It's not spelled that way in German. It's spelled right. But R-I-G-H-T means duty. It is a responsibility. Self-preservation is a responsibility. It is a jurisdiction. Preservation of one's family is a responsibility, a jurisdiction that's been delegated to individuals. And along with that jurisdiction, with all jurisdictions, all authority delegated, is the duty to protect that jurisdiction. And the utter impossibility of redelegating it to somebody else. You can't do that. You might give somebody else the responsibility or hope they help you, but in the end, you still answer for it. You have the ultimate responsibility. These are our Constitution's first principles, and they're just as important as the jury. The idea, our Constitution talks about the dollar, D-O-L-L-A-R, just as important as separation of powers, just as important as due process. Our fundamental liberties, the four militia clauses are brief, but they presuppose a full common law understanding of the duties of which they speak, just as the word due process freights in with it all of the common law understanding of due process. Our Constitution of the United States is a brief of common law government. It is not an exposition of government at all. It is a brief. And when it says trial by jury, it doesn't explain it, and it depends upon the courts or anyone else dealing with it to use the common law to fill in the gaps. Now, let me quote Chief Justice Taft of the United States Supreme Court. He said, "The language of the Constitution cannot be interpreted safely except by reference to the common law. The language of the Constitution cannot be interpreted safely except by reference to the common law." Justice Taft for the U.S. Supreme Court. Granville Sharp, one of the great scholars of New Testament Greek in England, said this: "The common law always required the people to be armed, and not only armed, but to be expert in arms." That bears repeating. Granville Sharp, student of history of the common law in England. He lived a long time ago, but this is the tradition that carries into our Constitution concerning the militia of the several states. He said this: "The common law always required the people to be armed, and not only armed, but to be expert in arms. As it is well said," I'm quoting, but I don't know who I'm quoting, but whoever said this, put it good. He said, "The only reason anybody has for taking your gun away is to make you weaker than he is, so that he can do something to you that you would not allow him to do if you were equipped to prevent it. The only reason." You know, I believe that fellow's name was Neil Smith. Neil Smith. But I'm not sure. I'll double check. But that's the quote. And as I'd said when we began these presentations, no other country since Israel of old has ever enjoyed a clear and well-structured respecting the personal right to keep and bear arms as our Constitution's four militia clauses. And with that, I'll draw in reins for this evening and let up. I appreciate, again, you allowing me to say a few words about what I believe is important to us as a people and a country. And if John wants to open for questions, I'll hang around a little longer. If not, I'll leave that up to you, John.
Okay, thank you, Brent. Yeah, we'll open the Q&A for a few questions, but and let me do that right now first. So anybody that has any questions specifically for Brent concerning our subject matter tonight, you know, hit star six as soon as... But before we do that... This is the first time in I don't know how many years. I know we've been doing this in for 3 years here now with the National Liberty Alliance. Before that, we were New York Liberty Alliance. Before that, we were New York Committeemen. So I don't even remember how many years we've been doing open forums here, but and having Monday meetings. But we failed here to read scripture. I failed to read scripture, God's first word above ours. So I'd like to go and read the scriptures that I should have read earlier, and then we'll go to questions. It's Leviticus chapter 26, verses 1 through 13. "Ye shall make you no idols, no graven image, neither rear you up a standing image, neither shall ye set up any image of stone in your land to bow down unto it, for I am Jehovah your God. Ye shall keep my Sabbaths and reverence my sanctuary. I am Jehovah. If you walk in my statutes and keep my commandments and do them, then I will give you rain in due season, and the land shall yield her increase, and the trees of the field shall yield their fruit. And your threshing shall reach on the vintage, and the vintage shall reach on the sowing time. And ye shall eat your bread to the full, and dwell in your land safely. And I will give peace in the land, and ye shall lie down, and none shall make you afraid. And I will rid evil beasts out of the land, neither shall the sword go through your land. And ye shall chase your enemies, and they shall fall before you by the sword. And five of you shall chase 100, and 100 of you shall put 10,000 to flight, and your enemy shall fall before you by the sword. For I will have respect unto you, and make you fruitful, and multiply you, and establish my covenant with you. And ye shall eat old store, and bring forth the old because of the new. And I will set my tabernacle amongst you, and my soul shall not abhor you. And I will walk among you, and will be your God, and ye shall be my people. I am Jehovah your God, which brought you forth out of the land of Egypt, that ye should not be their bondmen. And I have broken the bands of your yoke, and make you go upright. Okay, that was Leviticus chapter 26, verses 1 through 13. Okay, so let's move on now. We're going to go to questions. Anybody who has a question for Brent, we'll take our first person. It looks like Eric from Georgia. You got the mic. Go right ahead.
Thank you. Yeah, Georgia, Eric. A lot of questions, but I guess I'll just keep it to this one. Brent, you mentioned in your book how when so many people are employed by government, that this increases the executive's power. And I think you're talking specifically about the president. But I guess you could be talking about every governor as well. And I was just wondering if you could explain that more so that I could understand it better, just how this increases the executive power to have so many people receiving their paychecks from the government. Thank you.
Well, I want to go back and first, most people that work for government work for the executive branch. And I've discovered that most people that work for government don't realize that. They don't need to stop and think about it. Paycheck keeps coming. Who cares who I work for? I talked to an IRS agent one time that stopped looking for my client, and I got to talking with him and then chatting, just trying to make small talk and find out what people know. And I said, well, the Coast Guard of the United States was part of the tax collection bureaucracy. As far as I know, he said, that's impossible. The Coast Guard is called in to be part of the Navy sometimes. Well, that's true. But I said, no, I think you can go back and look, you'll discover the Coast Guard was first put in place and always intended to be a tax collection bureaucracy. And, of course, it was. We had what we called inland, like they say in England today, inland revenue. That's taxes inland. And then the taxes that were collected, ships coming in with tariffs and all. Well, the Coast Guard, very important part of our government at that time, they'd catch smugglers and all that kind of thing. But I find that people that work for government don't have a clue what they're doing, and they don't need to. And that's the whole danger of government, that people that work for government, as long as they get a paycheck, they don't care who's paying it, and they don't care who they're working for. They never stop to think for it. I've talked to people that work for the federal court that thought they worked for the prosecutor. Probation officers, for example, they don't have a clue who they're working for. Well, the prosecutor works for the executive branch and the president of the United States in that case. And the probation officer works for the judge. That's two different branches of government. We have a doctrine called separation of powers, and this gets real practical. But for example, with the president of the United States and governors, also by analogy, the president is charged with being the chief law enforcement officer at the federal level. And to enforce that law, both in this country and outside of this country, he is commander-in-chief of the Army, the Navy, the Air Force, and the United States Marines. And he's also commander now of hundreds of thousands of armed bureaucrats. It didn't used to be true a few years ago, but it is today. Bureaucrats are armed now, increasingly armed, and you can read long regulations about what kind of ammunition they're allowed to carry and the kind of explosive powder and that's inside the shell of the bullet they are authorized to carry. It's very detailed. Well, all of those folks that are charged with enforcing the law, and we have more laws than we've ever had too, and it takes 800 million people to do all those kind of things in the federal government. Well, the Congress doesn't have that kind of people working for him, for them, and the courts certainly just have a few people, by comparison, working for them. You know, when our country went to war, when the northern tier of states ended up battling the southern tier of states, about at that time, at the beginning of that terrible, bloody, useless conflict, I say useless because it got a lot of people killed and it didn't accomplish its purpose. But at any rate, about 6,000 people. I had to drag the numbers up out of the base of my brain. I'd lost them for a moment. About 6,000 people at that time worked for the general government in Washington, D.C. And 4 years later, at the end of that terrible war, right at about 60,000 people worked for the national government in Washington, D.C. It is true that war makes kings, and kings then in turn make more war, and then war makes more power to the king, and then kings make more war because they can, and it just goes round and round and round, and it gets worse and worse and worse, and we're not 60,000 now. That was a lot of people back when we only had about 30 and 40 million people in the country during that time, but now it's up in the millions, and it's overwhelming. That's what I mean when I say that government power is concentrated in the executive branch, because Congress and the courts aren't charged with enforcing the law, whether it be by the Army, Navy, Air Force, and United States Marines outside of the country, or all the bureaucrats, as many or more inside the country, armed. That's why it's so dangerous. The office called president is so dangerous. And it's very important that the person is in that office that understands something about law, unlike whoever that fellow is sitting in the White House now. If he has any understanding of law, he doesn't show it. That's the important point. I guess like Magna Carta says it this way. We require that all judges, sheriffs, bailiffs, coroners, people in government, we require that all of them, number one, know the law of the land, the law of the land. What is the law of the land? That's our common law, which is due process. It's a process, not result-oriented. They must know it, but that's not enough. So Magna Carta adds that second requirement for people in public office. They must intend to do it, to follow it well. And if they don't have that intention, they're not qualified for office. I don't care how many Ivy League school degrees they have. It's immaterial. It's the knowledge plus the intention that is important. And without both, you've got a non-starter for holding public office.
Thank you.
Okay.
Did that help?
Yeah, that was really helpful. I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Okay, we'll turn to take John from Illinois. You got the mic. Go right ahead, John.
Yeah, good evening, everybody. Captain John, State Coordinator, Illinois. Brett, I'm curious, how would you approach, either at the state or the county level, to get the public officials to restore a militia?
Well, first thing they've got to do, and I know what you're saying, it's hard. You give a book to a state legislator, they're just going to shelve it away and go campaign some more. They're not interested in law. They're interested in votes. And you're not going to change that, by the way. But every once in a great while, you'll find a legislator, for whatever reason, it is politically expedient for him to do that. I remember when I was a child, and I'll say this for your benefit, since you're from Illinois, we used to have back in that part of the world, there was a senator, and his name was Dirksen. And my dad would hear him on the radio, or he'd hear him on the radio, or he'd hear him on TV, and he'd say, "Boys, come in here a minute. I want you to listen, old Ev." He called him Ev. "Everett's on the radio or the TV. Don't listen to what he says, but listen close to how he says it." Well, Everett Dirksen was quite a character, and I discovered later, because I'd met people who did this for him. He never did anything, and most senators are this way. He never did anything, but what he didn't take an extensive poll to find out what people were thinking. And once he found out, then he would offer legislation that would satisfy that majority. See, it's all about the majority. Well, I like to think that Everett didn't offer legislation on things that were bad. He waited till something good was popular. But if it's not popular, a legislator isn't going to get involved with it because that would destroy his career. So you have, there has to be that. The legislators, people in public office, and I said this also in the beginning about founders. The founders of our nation were not what drove the revolution. They just echoed what people were thinking. It was their job, like all people in public positions, to find out what people are thinking and then say it. What was his name? Old MacArthur. MacArthur, when he was a young man, worked for President Teddy Roosevelt as an attaché out of West Point. And he noticed how popular he was. And he asked him one time, said, well, how is it you're so popular? He said, well, he said, I don't come up with anything new. I just am able and I try to discern what people are thinking. And I try to put their thoughts into words for them because most of them can't or don't want to, or they're too busy to worry about it. But they want to hear what they're thinking. I know that's true. I like to hear what I'm thinking, too. I like to hear somebody else say it. It's an important part of life. It's not to be just brushed aside and say that's worthless. No, because men have a sense, all men have a sense of what is right. And when they hear somebody put it in words, that's why Winston Churchill, I'm not promoting Winston, he was at his rotten side, but I am saying this about him. He knew how to put the ideas of others in words that satisfied them. And that's what moves people. And a legislator is looking for that. And if you can show a legislator, for example, that, hey, this militia idea is good. I know some legislators at home that they actually, they're worried, like you folks on this call, some of you, and I hear the talk, and you're saying there's going to be a crisis, and we're not worried. Well, we are a little bit, we want to be ready, that's all. Well, there are legislators like that. And if those folk, for example, you got Illinois is like most states, it's like New York, it's like Texas, it's like California. The cities have grown, and Nevada, the cities have grown so burgeoning that they have taken over the countryside, and that's what will destroy us. The mentality of the city, the non-productive, the consumptive mentality of city life destroys the productivity of country life. You know, they say, I've heard people say of Illinois that on a clear day, over half the voters can see the Sears Tower up in Chicago because over half the voters live in Chicago, and therein lies the problem. But if you can get a hold of one of those downstaters down there in southern Illinois, where the good old boys live down there, where they're still mining coal and raising tobacco and watermelons and doing stuff like that, you might find a legislator down there that would be interested in putting that idea forth in the legislature a little bit to talk to other people about it. Now, that doesn't mean he's going to get Madigan and all those fellows up in Chicago on board with him. But once an idea gets started, there's no telling what will happen. And I do know this, if you do nothing, you get nothing. So I would suggest this to you. Buy some of these little primers. They're about 100 pages long on the militia of the several states. Our Constitution's answer to its enemies within and without. And you can go to Amazon.com, type in Brent Allen Winters, and all my books will come up. I've tried it. It works. And The Militia of the Several States is one of those books. Get that book. And even if the guy doesn't do anything but read the first few pages and the last page, there's a model militia statute in the back of that book. And I worried over it for a long time. It's not the all and ends all. It's not the final word, but it's as good as I can do for now anyway. And take that and use that as a template to try to put together a militia statute. Tell your state legislator, tell your local, tell your sheriff, I've got a statute here that might provide some guidance to the sheriff. For example, these committees of safety, or just to the committees of safety themselves until the sheriff gets on board. This book has principles in the back in a statute form that can be used to fashion somewhat of an organization here locally for the sheriff to work with the committee of safety or get it to your legislator. And, you know, it's amazing what's happening. I made mention of this last time. I said the people are in these powerful positions that are so famous. They are the people, the men. They follow the people of the United States. Judge Posner, up there in Chicago, Seventh Circuit. He's the one that wrote that opinion, McDonald versus Chicago, recently concerning the Second Amendment. and he gave the legislature of the state of Illinois 180 days to put concealed carry legislation in place, and if they didn't do it, that he was going to do it for them, fashion it himself and make it law by order of the federal court in Chicago, the Seventh Circuit. Well, Posner's not that kind of a guy. It surprised me he said that. Well, he's saying it because 40 states have already done it, and he was going to go with the flow. That's what it amounted to. There's something very important about that. The people of the United States do have power. They have what we call in politics the political word, the best political word. It's not a political word, but it's a word that applies to that, is sway, S-W-A-Y. That's the word that really gets what the people have. Not rule, not even power, but sway. It is, and as Fortescue said in the 15th century, it is the political component of our common law tradition. And if we ignore it, we ignore it to our great peril. It is important to start low, but us folks that aren't in the upper echelons of the hierarchy, and say, no, this is what it ought to be. And God always uses the minority. I like to say to people, when Noah went into the ark, he was in the minority. He was made fun of, no doubt spit upon. He was in the minority. But when he came out, he was in the majority. And by him doing that, I'm here and you're here. We're all here and we have what we have. In the sense of the most fundamental covenants of God, he gave in Noah, Genesis chapter 9. Well, that is what I would suggest you do. It's a matter of words. God has chosen to rule with words, and he made men in his imagination, his image, and thereby we also rule with words. I tell my you, I don't do it now, they're grown. I used to tell my children what to do. I ruled with words. And words have power, the greatest of power. And God himself doesn't do anything, but he doesn't do it outside of speaking. First thing he said is, let there be light. And what happened? There was. Well, men have a similar kind of power. It's not the same power, but it's a similar principle. Put it that way. And men speak. And when men speak, they can produce guilt in others. They can produce shame. They can produce motivation in the political realm for all of those reasons. And guilt, the gift that keeps on giving, is still important. Put these fellows to shame. Get the book and give it to your legislator. That's a start. Now, there are other books about the militia, but I put this one together because I wanted something short and sweet that hit the nail on the head hard and fast, got straight to the point, the bottom line, the four militia clauses, and said here and say, here it is. And here's how those four clauses work. Does that help? I hope it does.
Well, I was not concerned about the mechanics. I was more concerned about the approach, and I think I learned a lot from what you just said. I think quite by a natural tendency, I have been able to put into words what other people think my entire adult life, and I think that's a valuable lesson that I'm walking away from with your comments.
Okay, I'd like to add on top of this a little bit and make just some points of things that we're doing here, because we recently, I think it was in March, sent a paper of information and a mandamus to every governor in the nation, and one of the things we gave him in that mandamus, we talked about his duty to make sure that there was a organized militia. Now, we're going to do unorganized militias until we can get organized militias. It is the duty, since the Congress is not doing their duty, it is up to the governors to really push Congress to do their duties, and we the people to do the same thing. But meanwhile, the governors need to respond. In order for us to maintain a free state, as the Second Amendment tells us, we must have a militia. And so there, one of the things we are going to do, and I mentioned this earlier on, we're going to write a paper of a plan, of an idea that all the counties might want to consider to execute. And one of the things, of course, first and foremost, is to communicate with their sheriff and get things going. Now, once they establish, and this is going to be the suggestion, people can do whatever they want, of course, they're free, this is grassroots, and they could do it before or later or however they feel necessary, but we'll give them some rules of thumbs that we think from some of the things we've learned and a little bit of wisdom that we've got. Now, once they establish at least half the state, if there's, let's say there's 60 counties, if you get 30 counties on board developing, and that's just a rule of thumb. It could be less, it could be more, but about half. Maybe you have 30 counties, it would be 15 counties. But once you get about half the state established with committees of safeties and they're communicating amongst each other and they come in one accord onto the governor to press the issue, the governor needs to press Congress to do their job and to provide for the militia. But meanwhile, it is his duty and his job to provide for that militia as best he can until we can get Congress to do their job. And if the state needs to withhold monies that is deserving to the United States, to the federal government, maybe that's something they would want to consider doing. They should talk. The governor should talk with the legislature and work that out. So we the people got to press this if we don't get a militia going. Any of the counties that don't have a militia, okay, after all, we the people are the militia, we need to be talking with the sheriff and say, you know, let him know and let him start to talk, get some dialogue with him on some ideas of the fact that if there's an emergency, what are we going to do? You know, he needs to be able to call a militia, and we don't have a militia in this county, and we want to develop something. And let him lead the way until we can get the law, get the governor to do something within our states. There are a lot of places where the militia has been, organizing. So let's bring them in and let them teach the other counties and let's spread it across the nation to what we could do to develop unorganized militias. We don't necessarily want to turn a militia over to the sheriff, but we do want to work with the sheriff and let him know that, you know, when there's an emergency, he's the guy that's in charge and the militia is available for his need. He can call them posse comitatus, and we the people ultimately are the militia. So this is something we need to work on as a people. We need to develop a plan. We're going to propose a plan for all counties to work with. And, again, they can take that plan and do it as ever, however they see fit. But we do have to push this issue. But if you got a final word before we go to the next caller, John?
No, I'm good.
Okay, thank you. Okay, we'll go to the next caller out of Connecticut. Crystal, you got a question or a comment for Brent? Crystal from Connecticut.
Hello.
Hey, Crystal. How you doing? You got a question or a comment for Brent?
Yes, I do. I received a call. I was at a meeting tonight, so I was telling the parents about the National Liberty Alliance and also, you know, their constitutional rights. I received a call from a gentleman where they try to take his grandkids, and I guess they're doing quite a bit of this here in Connecticut, and they're putting them into foster homes, other people giving them $3,000 to $4,000, and they take them without just cause. I received another letter today that they want my house on the 30th of July, and there was this other woman who was fighting with cancer, and there's a judge here in Connecticut that was arrested a few months back, and he was the one who was stealing a lot of people's property and evicting them and all kinds of illegal stuff. Well, this woman, the media is supposed to be meeting with her tomorrow, so I'm going to try to get some people with her. So that's what's going on here, and we're going to be making some other mentioning, but I can call you afterwards or tomorrow morning.
Okay, Crystal, thank you.
Okay. And right. We're just getting the people signed up. We're going to the schools and the colleges and telling them, you know.
Okay, appreciate it. That's where we got to go. We got to go to the schools. Okay, let me take the next call. They probably have a question or a comment for Brent. Thanks, Crystal. Okay, Carol from North Carolina. Carol from North Carolina, do you have a question or a comment for Brent? Last call for Carol from North Carolina. Paula, what state you're from? You got the mic. Paula.
Oh, hi. How are you? Can you hear me?
Yeah, how you doing? You got a question or a comment for Brent?
Yes, I was wondering, you know, what he thinks about Dick Cheney. I sent you an email about it, but I want to know what he thinks about Dick Cheney supporting Donald Trump now.
Yeah, I don't know that we want to get into politics. I don't know. Do you want to comment on that, Brent?
No, I follow those things tangentially, but
yeah.
I can't. I have no input. I concentrate on doing what I do, and those fellows can concentrate on doing what they do. But in the end, I don't think they're going to have any more influence than me if I keep concentrating, and I would encourage other people to know what's going on, but concentrate on what God's given you to do at hand right now.
Mm-hmm.
Don't get caught up. They want to suck you. They want to politicize you. They want to get you off the local stuff. I mean, no matter what happens on the national level, we've got business to take care of right here locally, or we're going to lose our country. I do pay attention, and there are things I desire about Cheney and Trump, and I never thought, from what I understand, Cheney wasn't really the fella I'd want to follow. He seems to be a little bit shady to me. That's an understatement, probably a lot more than that. But politics, I do know this, you want everybody to support you can, because that brings in more votes, and I'm sure Trump's happy about that, even if he doesn't like the fella.
Okay, that's a very good answer.
I presume what you're saying, and I haven't heard, that Cheney may be running with Trump. Is that what you're saying?
No, that's not what I'm saying. Everybody really knows where he's been at and what he's done. And, that's reality, but...
We hope we don't see Cheney again.
Well, that's where I'm at.
That's not a political position. That's just a right and wrong position, so, anyway. So.
That might be designed to discredit Trump. Did you ever think of that?
That's true. Yeah. You know what? I don't want to get into politics or anything, but I find it interesting that we have someone here that is not a politician running for office. We should think about that. But in any event, I think it's time to move on. Appreciate the call, Paula. Thank you.
Thank you, Gerard.
I'm going to pass things over to you. I know you're not on the board right now. You don't have control on the panel. Gerard?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Calling Gerard.
Hello?
Yeah, you don't have control of the panel? You're not on the panel right now? The control panel? Okay, you don't want to talk to me. I get it. Anyway, okay, Brent.
I'm sorry, my mic was muted, and I'm going, I do not.
Yeah. Okay, if you want to pick up the calls, Jan can maybe... Is Jan here? You want to control the panel for Gerard?
Sure, John. Gerard, you're right.
Okay, you two guys can handle it. Brent, we appreciate your responding to the questions, and if you want to hang out for a while, maybe something else will come up. But if not, Lord willing, we'll see you next Monday. Matter of fact, we'll talk soon. I want to talk with you about where we're at with the sheriff's thing. We just finished a PowerPoint video on... the Committee of Safety, and now we really want to start pressing in on the sheriff. But I'll talk with you in a day or two, okay?
See you again, John. We'll be talking. Thanks.
Thank you. Gerard, you got it. Mute yourself, Brent, while we're moving on. You can always unmute and pipe in if you want. Go ahead, Gerard.
Okay. Let's get the next person there.
Okay, the next one is Michigan, Jan, and Linda. You're unmuted.
Go ahead.
Hi, this is Dodie from Michigan, and I have a question here. I don't know if it was for Brent or whatever, John or Gerard, whoever wants to answer can, if you have any comment about it. I was doing some research, and I came across something that in 1833 that Congress wrote something called a force bill, a.k.a. the Bloody Bill, and apparently, I don't know everything about it because I was having a really hard time accessing it. They were really battling me to get this information on the Internet, and it's something, it was originally about something about South Carolina kind of not wanting to pay tariffs, and also something about slavery. And they were wanting to secede, and President Jackson, Andrew Jackson, was the president at the time. And so what Congress did was they made this force bill to give him more authority. And basically, I guess from what I gathered from it, it was that the president got mad at what the state was doing, and the state wanted to nullify federal authority. So basically, this bill gave them, the federal government and the president, more authority to do what he wanted to do. And basically, I see it as a retaliation. He was allowed to use military force against them, and he basically threatened them that if they, you know, didn't comply, they were going to be, you know, getting the military, you know, forced on them. And apparently it's, some people believe, unconstitutional. It sounds like it to me. And they stated that it was a violation of the Ninth Amendment. So I know John speaks frequently about, you know, the things being null and void, you know, if they're repugnant against the Constitution. But is anyone aware of this? And how would the nullification doctrine fit in with this, if so?
Well, I'm not aware of that particular thing, but I know that there's been a constant struggle through years with that. And the Ninth Amendment just says that anything that's not written in the Constitution will be reserved to the people. And Marbury versus Madison says anything that's repugnant to the Constitution is null and void. So between those two, you have your answer. But of course, you know, when it comes to the government, a lot of times you got to force that to enforce it. But I don't know anything about that particular thing that you're talking about, that bill. I mean, there's lots of things that have been pushed through, and they do lots of legislation. And just remember that you can't change the Constitution through legislation. There's a procedure to go through with a certain amount of people, 3/4 vote. And they don't usually go through that because they know that most of the stuff they want to do won't hold muster to the people. So they always try to sneak it in. Even some of the rights in the Bill of Rights, they declared them as ratified when they weren't, to get them through.
And yeah, well, let me make a. You're talking about the other amendments after the after the Bill of Rights, but the Bill of Rights, ultimately, the key part to this whole thing is they're not open for discussion. They're not open. They cannot, discard any of the unalienable rights, and those are just a few that are written in there. And our founding fathers seem to have had quite a bit of wisdom to be able to put a select a Bill of Rights that really kind of put a hold on a lot of abuse that could take place, from the authority we're giving them in the Constitution. Because, you see, the Constitution has to be understood in light of the Bill of Rights. Any legislation that would violate our unalienable rights, of course, would be null and void. And of course, you know, you can't all of a sudden tomorrow take away our right of defending ourselves. This is natural law. This is common law. So those cannot be, they're not up for debate or discussion in any way to do anything there. But of course, we can adjust the powers that we give our legislators or even to the judiciary and the president and so on. We can add things, of course, but it has to be done in a proper way.
I
don't know anything about that bill either, so I don't know.
And there's sort of a maxim of law that they are not allowed to do anything that would take rights away from the people. You know, our forefathers didn't leave them a way to legislate away the Constitution as they would have you believe today, that they can get the state legislators to, like, do away with the sheriff. That doesn't hold water. Anyway, I hope that helps.
We just have to basically be as bold as possible, because, I mean, look at everything that they are forcing, you know, upon us anyway, and it's not just the federal government, it's the states too, and the states' rights have seemed to become so perverted, so we're not only battling against the federal government, but against our own state, and local as well, as we know. So it's just, it's a battle, isn't it?
Well, just remember, united we stand and divided we shall fall. And that's why this Committee of Safety that we have discovered and sort of fallen upon, that we're pushing so deeply and hard across this nation for the grassroots to pick up on it and start exercising their unalienable right of governance. Look at, they need to control the government on its local level. You control the local level, you control the higher level too, you control Washington. because you will control the people that control Washington or supposed to be controlling Washington. When they find out that they can't control Washington, then they'll start cutting the ties off and maybe start doing something about things. But meanwhile, we the people need to be doing what we need to be doing in the courts as best we can. And the people on the ground, so to speak, need to establish the administrators within the courts so that we can do what we have to do in the courts and establish these committees of safeties. And we will be pushing back on the committee man, too, at some point in the future. Right now, you know, that's going to be a battle in the court. And but once we get to the other side of things, meaning being we can bring common law back and the king of the court back into the courts, and I do believe that's going to happen. And I believe it's going to happen reasonably soon, too, because the pressure is building and something's got to give. And but in any event, once we get to the other side, and common law is finally applied, it's going to be a no-brainer. It's going to be real easy to take back the committee man process and start giving that back to the people so that they start picking statesmen and they stop, you know, supporting these people. Look, we're not supporting, you know, I'm a committee man, and I've been a committee man for quite a few years. And we're not supposed to be supporting these people who are running for office. We're approving them. We're saying they're qualified for it. And the qualification is their knowledge of the law, their understanding of the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, and understanding that we, the people, are in control and not them. And they have to be obedient to us, and they're not to be taking on any of this funny money and all the other things. You know, those are the people. We want statesmen. And then once we approve them, it's up to them to get themselves elected. The committee man shouldn't be posting their signs or doing any of that garbage. That's not their job. Their job is to find good statesmen, walk the papers for them so that they can get into the office, and you try to give them to the people so that you can get them in there and you know, people can decide in their own parties, and hopefully one day we'll get rid of parties. But, you know, they can go into the challenge on the primary challenge, so to speak. And so you give them three or four people to run on a ticket, let them decide which one they want. And then that person would run. But then we got to control them. And we can control them through the courts, and we can control them through recall through the committee men, and we can control them through the committee of safety. So we've got three ways. And if we control all three of those things, we control everything in our government. Nobody's going to get away with anything. As soon as they get out of line, we'll pull them right back in real quick. And we have to be conscious. Once we take control, we need to be conscious at all times. We could never forget what we have learned and what we have gone through the past 50-some-odd years and so.
Yeah, and we have to get re-educated, too. I mean, basically, society as a whole, you know, has forgotten about the Constitution.
Well, exactly. That's exactly what Jefferson said. If the people don't know and they don't know what to do, then teach them. You know, don't take it away from them. Teach them. I'm paraphrasing, of course. We have to educate. And that's not, look at. It starts with ourselves, and it starts with the people around us, and then we move into the schools. You know, we got to go into the lower grades. We got to get in there. We got to get morals back in the schools. We got to get the people in control of their own education to begin with, and get away from this centralized education. But we got to get these things, civics. We got to get the Constitution. We got to get the committee man process. We got to get all these things, not only in grammar school, but in high school and in colleges. And we got to get people active. We got to train our children that they owe something back to society, because society, you know, people volunteer for a period. Everyone should be a committee man once in their life. It's a 2-year thing. It's not a big deal. You know, everybody should. Everybody should respond to the jury when they're called. Everyone should. You know, if everybody does, you're not going to be called that often anyway. You know, there's quite a few people, but everybody's got to get involved, okay? And it's not asking for their life. We're asking for a little time of your life here and there. Everybody should join, get into the service, and serve their country. And everybody should participate in the militia. You know, all of these things we need to be doing.
Okay, thank you, John.
Okay, we'll move on to the next one. We have Massachusetts Mary. Massachusetts Mary.
Hello?
Yes, we hear you.
Okay. Yes, I just had a question. I do believe the Committees of Safety is the best way we can go right now. I wanted to ask John, Gerard, all of you, if you had been aware of the executive order that was signed at the end of the week, putting Obama signed one, putting us into a transition period. Is anybody aware of that?
Say that again. I missed the last line you said. I kind of, your phone broke up.
It was the committees of safety, I understand, are really important right now because we're anticipating.
Yeah, but a transition into what when you talk about it? Did he put some kind of an executive order, which he has no authority to do? We haven't given any permission of executive orders, so we'll have to straighten that one out, too, at some point in time.
Well, that's what I wanted to talk to you about, because it happened at the end of the week, and it was an executive order to put us into a transition period.
But a transition period for what?
I did see that, for the handing over of power.
It's basically giving the power to the UN, because this present corporation basically is being run by the UN, and that's what he's doing. He's running around doing everything through the UN. So I didn't know if you guys were aware of it and wanted to address it, or I just wanted to bring it to your attention that it was it's pretty much being a lot of people are noticing it. He did that press dinner speech right after he signed it, and he made a remark that the end of the republic never looked so good to his guests at the dinner. And
yeah,
so,
it's a shame. We have a president who hates America. We have a president who, in all likelihood, is not a citizen of this nation. We have a president that despises liberty and freedom. We have a president that would rather see us enslaved and wants to see America become third world. And that's what he's there for, I believe. I mean, everything he has done has proven that is his end result. So if you just look at what he has done and what he has said and where he has gone, and just look at the works, I mean, forget about anything else, and he'll tell you exactly who he is. I hate America, I hate you, and I want to destroy this nation, because that's what he's been doing for 8 years. And I don't believe that he was truly elected. I don't think he was elected the first time. Forget about the second time. It's we're in the trouble.
We didn't even know who he is.
Right. So here's the key thing. You know, all I do is I'm just focusing, you know, what we need to do to fix the problem. And everything is fixing the problem right where you're at. We don't have to worry about him up there. We just have to worry about what's going on right in front of us, in our own grassroots, in our courts, around us, and the people who work for us that are elected through our election districts. We'll worry about those people. And if everybody's doing that, we'll get a hold of him and deal with him in the future, too. All that'll fix itself. Let's just do grassroots. That'll fix it all. This committee of safety is so important. It's so powerful. It's so necessary. People need to grab onto this. Everybody, we need to flood the emails and stop and be just a redundant and a pain in the neck to people. Have you seen the video? Go take a look at the video. Pass it to friends. We need to make this thing go viral. Go to the YouTube. It'll be on our site probably tomorrow. Hopefully we'll get it fixed on the site. But it is downloadable, too.
I'll get it out. I just wanted to just see if Gerard or you had heard about that, because that's what he's doing, because I know, like you said, locally we have to be prepared, because what he's doing is taking all of our local. He's taking the courts, the Congress, and our local governments away. That's what he's doing, and everything he's bringing in is this UN power. And this transition basically is going to transition the power to the people of the UN and his non-GOs,
such as FEMA and everybody else.
So I just wanted to just address it with you, just to put the bug in your ear. I'm on the same track that you guys are, but if we don't have local power. Local help, because he's taken it away from them and basically giving it to the UN, which he has no right to do, then it's up to us to go up against that. That's all I'm saying.
You know, I read the document that they're claiming that he's giving power, and it doesn't say to the UN, and some people are saying he's giving it to General Dunford, and then there's other people saying that, they've actually arrested him, and so in other words, the military's taken over because of kind of a coup, and he's just there, you know, doing for figurehead purposes. The other thing is the wording out of that came from a 1963 thing, which was around the time of Kennedy, and I read similar things about transition periods, because I was in politics, and when one party goes out and another comes in, there are certain things written in order to transition the power. Because, if,
right.
you know, especially when you have, like, let's say the Republicans going out and the Democrats coming in, which is all baloney, but they like to do that, you're supposed to have a smooth transition. And a lot of that language was stuff that was written into, because when I was elected, I went into a very adversarial transition. They handed us the keys and they said, here, have at it. Didn't tell us where anything was, what was going on. It made life horrible for the first year because we had to get on our feet and they didn't tell us anything. So there are certain bills that are written up for the transition from one president to the other. And if you read that thing, it almost sounded like, you know, getting ready for the president to leave the office, you know, between November and January 4th or whatever it is when they swear in, there's a transition period. And it says, it talks about, you know, the potential candidates for president that, like, if you got a guy that's running and it looks like he's going to win or this one's going to win, they start preparing them ahead of time. So I'm not sure that it is what it is, and it might be a psyop. They might be trying to get everybody worked up over something that's been there all along just to get us to say, oh, the military's coming in. I don't trust anything they say. The jury's still out on that paper. I don't pretend to know exactly what it says, but I'm just telling you, think outside of the box. Much of what they do is smoke and mirrors, and a lot of times that's exactly how they do it. And you get all worked up in arms, and they go, you stupid people, that's the transition from a new president, you know, the old president to the new president. So
right.
I didn't see anything in that paper that said he was transitioning to the UN or anything else. Don't forget, there's a lot of baloney out there. And he would sit there and go, oh, the demise of the nation never looked so good, because that's how they operate. It's psychological warfare. And our biggest enemy
yeah.
is us eating and biting into that and giving it life. So just be careful, because it could just be all a bunch of baloney. Okay?
Yeah. Well, I know that, like you say, it's a normal transition from one president to the next. Normally, it's not signed until later on. They might be signing it early. For whatever reason, maybe as a PSYOP, I don't know.
Well, or the military has told him, you're stepping down because we're going to arrest you otherwise. You know, and
right.
and he could be play acting, going, oh, it's never looked so good. Meanwhile, they're kicking him out of town with his tail between his legs, and he's looking to save face. So I don't know. I'm not going to.
That's what I've heard, but I've also heard that it could be going the other way, too. And
that's right, because that's what they're going to do. They never want us to know what's really going on. And if they think
yeah.
they can change it by getting the people all worked up, they're going to play that PSYOPs game. And so it could all be a PSYOPs, you know what I mean? So anyway,
yeah,
that's my comment. I read it, and I said to me, gee, this looks like what we should have had in place when I came into office, because it wasn't a peaceful transition. It was, everything was hidden, and there was, you know, it was very hard to not know what contracts were out, what needed to be paid. You know, somebody should sit you down, you know, to have a peaceful transition of you know, executives, you know, that get voted out and new ones coming in. You know, you're not,
right.
you know, you're there as a public servant. You're not there to wreak havoc. You know what I mean? And so,
right.
look at the Clintons when they left the White House. They took all the gifts from the heads of states. You're not allowed to take that. They had to give them back. So, I mean, that's part of that peaceful transition. You don't walk away with the furniture when you leave the White House, do you? Well, unless you're Hillary and Billary.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, that's all I got to say about it.
The only reason why I refer to the UN, when I refer to the UN, I'm referring to the present corporation. And we've had different de facto corporations, and the present one, basically, I believe, originated with the French, and is in collusion with the UN, and that's why I think you're seeing all of this stuff with the UN that he's doing. My point is that the committees of safety are going to have to be really important, because what he's basically doing is breaking down, obviously, we know, every branch of government, and so that we can't operate, function, so that we had to have our fourth branch, which is us, the common law grand jury. But then it's going further, because like your previous caller said, you know, when you get down to the state level, when you get down to the governors, you get down to your local level, it's just infiltrated everywhere. So we need to be ready, and we need to have these communities of safety, because when you have this present corporation that is basically the UN is handling it, then they're in collusion with each other, then that's what they're doing. That's why they're getting away with all this UN crap, you know? And the UN's not our government. Not our government. Huh? But it's taking the power away from all of our
other local governments.
So that's what my point was. And I just
wanted to know if you heard about the executive order and General Dunford as well.
So, and what you thought of it, because yeah, you could take it about five different takes on that, you know? So anyways, I just want to call in and ask that question. I
just wanted to
stay up to date with you guys, and I will be getting that video out there for you, and I will be running it around, okay?
Okie dokie.
Great.
All right,
thanks, Mary.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay.
Hang in there. Bye-bye.
Next, we have
New York Mod.
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Can you?
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi.
Thank you.
Have your speakers on.
Speakers.
Hi.
Got a big echo
somehow.
Is it too loud?
Yeah, turn your speakers down.
It seems to be echoing.
It seems to be echoing.
Okay. Just a minute. Not better? Is that better?
Yep, that sounds better.
Yep, that sounds better.
Yeah, is Gerard there?
I'm on the line. I think you're back.
Hi, Gerard.
How you doing?
Well, I'm just out of the rehab, holding my breath. I haven't gotten any more notices since you guys sent out those letters.
Well, that's good. That's very good.
I hope it scared them, but you know, these people are so ruthless.
Well, they know that the people are coming.
Well, Gerard, I wanted to know if there's any possibility of doing anything to motivate that judge in Brooklyn.
To doing what to the judge? I'm sorry. I'm here.
Motivating.
Yeah, we can talk about that, because there's some things that have gone out since I talked to you that you could send them that they may understand more of what we're talking about.
Okay.
A hard time because I hear the word back in my ear.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And listen, I'm going to call you because my daughter's back from Florida tomorrow.
Yeah.
And so maybe she could give you a hand. I haven't been able to get her out of town.
I guess, you know, anything would help.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, we're going to the county seat to speak tomorrow, Mariel and I.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to talk about mortgage fraud because our district attorney is about to be indicted.
Well, there you go. So Who is that? Is that Fareed Bahar down there?
No, it's Mr. Spota.
Say that again. I didn't hear it.
Spota.
Spota.
He's the federal attorney.
Suffolk County District Attorney.
Oh, it's a Suffolk County. So the county's actually.
Yeah,
going.
And
exactly.
he was just outed by sheriff. Our sheriff here.
Really.
He was outed him, and Mariel and I want to go to see the sheriff, but we needed some guys to go with us.
Yeah, that's a good idea. The more the merrier.
Yeah, well, we're trying to get some men to go with us. It's hard, you know. We haven't been able to find anybody. But I feel that I should go to the sheriff because he's becoming very active, and he's after SPOTA because he said that SPOTA was blocking his investigations.
That's very interesting.
Yeah. So I had spent the last 2 days trying to write that guy a letter, but I think it's a total waste of time because I reported the bank's fraud way back in 2008, and he refused to do it.
Right. Well, you know, people are in a different place than they were in 2008. They see that the people are coming out, so now is a better time than it was in 2008. You know?
Well, do you think it's still worth writing to a DA that's about to be indicted?
Well, I don't know about that. He's not going to be. He's going to be more interested in his indictment than anything you could say to him. But you know, there's going to be a vacuum there, and you should be there when the vacuum comes to the new guy to put your case in. You know what I mean? You should be meeting him on the doorstep as he comes in. Because you know what they say, the new broom sweeps clean.
Yeah, but what's going to happen? I mean, if he gets indicted, well, they'll have to elect a new DA,
no,
won't they?
What they'll do is they'll appoint somebody until the next election. And I don't know what the rule is, you know, who the next in line is. But they do have a whole protocol for that.
Well, according to the sheriff. According to the sheriff, everybody he had under him was crooked.
Yeah, but that doesn't matter. They still end up appointing somebody. Doesn't mean necessarily mean it's somebody under him. You know, they got a whole protocol. I'm not sure who the guy is.
The
mayor or the governor
or who gets to appoint it.
You know, of course,
Cuomo is
no good
bet.
Of putting somebody good on,
I wouldn't expect him to do anything right.
Yeah, and a whole bunch of people going after the county legislature, too.
Well, I also hear that Cuomo's the next guy that's going down. So, you know, look, at when you have a vacuum like that, it could be a good thing. I don't know who's going to come in there, but you need to pay attention. And whoever it is, you should still be there when he comes in
their
door.
Hand
in
your paperwork.
Okay.
He's gonna be on his best behavior.
The guy
behind him just got arrested. You know?
Yeah.
That's a good way for him to go in the office and do something for the people
to make a name for himself.
And you might as well be the first person to get justice.
Right. Well, I understand the Judge Tridenti is on her way out and her way out.
Well, thank God for that. The one who believes that common law has been abrogated in New York State. We have her
brother. Yeah. Well, I guess I'll keep on writing my letter and putting my case in front of them.
Yes. Yes. Look at, you know what they say, the squeaky wheel gets the grease, so we're going to
keep squeaking.
Maybe I should just try to go make an appointment there at the DA's office.
Well, when the new one comes in, I don't think you should do it if this guy is going to jail.
No.
You know. But anyway, keep your eyes open.
Keep your eyes open to see who's going to go in there.
Yeah. Now the other thing I wanted to know is what happened to that common law grand jury paper of the class action lawsuit against all the banks.
I don't know what you mean.
Remember, John said that
he did on judicial foreclosure.
I don't know what you were going to sue all the, you were doing a class action lawsuit against all the banks.
No, I don't remember that. Well, first of all, we wouldn't do it what you call a class action. That's something the attorneys
do.
We might do
something
where people sign on, but
we wouldn't call it a class action.
You know, in class action suit,
you get
thousands of people on it.
$0.42
when they're done.
The attorneys walk away with.
Right.
So So I don't know about that.
I don't know
if there was actually
a suit we were going to do on the banks
in particular. I mean, we did put a suit we were going to do on the banks in particular.
Well, can one include Immigrant Bank into that lawsuit or that class action or whatever?
Yeah, I don't know if we name specific names, but anybody that broke the law with their subprime mortgages and all those, they've all been called out. So when it comes time to do the deal, their names
will be in there.
I'm having a real hard time talking because I think you've got my speakerphone.
I'm on the computer.
Yeah, but your speakers are turned up too loud. We can't stand what you're saying.
Oh. I don't know where to fix it.
Don't worry about it. I'll call you tomorrow, Bob, because we've got a couple things we have to talk about.
Okay, but Gerard, we're going to the county legislature, so we'll be gone for the morning.
Yeah, well, I'll call you later in the day. I'm working tomorrow, so I'll call you tomorrow myself.
Okay.
Okay?
All right, Jeff. That would be good. Okay.
Have a good night and take it easy. You're back in the house now, right?
I'm back in the house, but you know, it's very nerve-wracking.
Right.
Right.
Okay, well, we'll talk about that.
We'll talk about that.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay.
All right.
Take care.
Okay.
Take care.
Thank you, Gerard.
You're welcome.
And to all everybody, you know. I mean, I did read about Dunford also.
Yes, you know, they're never going to let us really know what's going on because you know how good the news is at reporting real news, right?
Right. Well, if it happens, we'll find out. I don't know when we're going to find out. I mean, the news are not very good. But
no,
whatever.
But at some point it'll come out. I mean, if it's really truly happening.
Yeah. Okay. All right, dear. Thank you for talking. I mean, other people might have questions, you know, as to what we can do, you know.
Yeah. Well, it's always good to hear from you, so
take it easy.
Okay. Good night to you and John and everybody.
Yeah. Bye-bye.
Good night. Yeah.
Listen, I'm very lucky. At least I can talk.
Right.
Yeah, you can say that again.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks, Maud. We'll talk to you next week. Our next caller is California Jeremiah.
That is me. Can you hear me okay?
Yep.
How are you?
Good.
Good. Well, I have something I'd like to read that I came across that I thought was important. It's nothing in contradiction to common law. But it is a bit of historical background. Do you mind if I read a couple paragraphs?
Yeah, as long as it's on point, go ahead.
Thank you. By the way, I just want to say thank you to Richard Walbaum for being so adamant at, you know, having me do research for, you know, analyzing case law and doing some shepherdizing, as well as Richard Michael as well, who wrote the book Snake Oil 1 and 2. So if they're listening, so historical background on the common law. With the growth of Christianity and Christian philosophy came the decline and fall of Rome. The concept of the state as the highest form of society began to be questioned with the rise of the Christian Church. With the Norman invasion of the British Isles in 1066, precise and orderly methods into the government and law of England were introduced. Thus began, under the Norman and Angevin monarchs of the 11th and 12th centuries, the gradual growth of a central administration and the development of the courts of law. The term common law was used for the law developed in the king's courts and was generally employed in order to distinguish between it and that of the ecclesiastical courts. In effect, the concept common law was adopted from the canon law of the Christian Church, which was the common law of Christendom. Thus, the common law came into use in the reign of Edward I, 1272 to 1307, or just shortly thereafter. It meant general, as opposed to special law. The law common to the whole land. Unenacted law as distinguished from statutes and ordinances. The law of the temporal as opposed to the ecclesiastical courts. Later, common law became contrasted with equity. The common law of the king's courts was made by the royal justices from the mass of customary law of the realm and became the common law of England. There were three great courts of common law: King's Bench, Exchequer, and Common Pleas. As the routine of these royal courts became firmly established, it was possible to forecast their decisions in terms of similar cases decided by them in the past. However, according to Theodore F. T. Plucknett, the practice of basing decisions upon precedent did not come about because it was the best rule to follow in decision-making, but because it enabled all existing courts to function with a minimum of trouble. In at least some respects, the common law reflects the feudal structure whence it was derived. Over a period of centuries, the law defining the relationship between the Anglo-Norman monarchs and their tenants in chief became the law that was applicable to all Englishmen. In any case, I suppose it's a bit draining on the psyche to sit here and listen to the historical backgrounds of the common law, but certainly it shows a deep insight into the nature of it. And I stopped reading, but the idea was to kind of give a brief excerpt from a book entitled The Judicial Process. And this is just the introduction, talking about the law and the courts. And this is also actually from another book called Foundations of the Common Law. And, you know, in common law, they had a writ system. So I have another small reading that I'd like to do on the writ system, if you don't mind.
Well, it's getting late, so we have covered this under common law, and we understand that our common law did come out of England, but our forefathers put their twist on it because there were problems with what England was doing, and that's what they attempted to fix with the American system.
And what is that twist? Let me ask you that. What is that twist you're referring to? Because I'm just curious.
Well, the thing is they were moving towards precedent and statutes instead of you know, the law under the land, under the Constitution, under God's law. And, you know, and like you said, it just made things easier for them to run and made things more efficient. You know, they don't like common law because common law, in each case, is decided on its own merits, and so you can go on and on. Whereas if we could say, you know, well, that case is just like this, so we'll rule the same way. But there's a maxim that says just because two things are similar doesn't mean they're the same. So
let me ask you,
it's all about streamlining and making money ultimately.
Can I interject and ask you a question about the religious nature, Gerard? of because this is just for me here. I'm just curious. What is this, you know, religiosity, this overtone with common law, when here in the historical background, it's saying that with the growth of Christianity and Christian philosophy came the decline and fall of Rome, the concept of the state as the highest form of society began to be questioned with the rise of the Christian church. And so to me that means that, you know, like when you're talking of state, you're talking of nationalism and Christian church, common law Christian. So you're talking that the founders had this idea that was completely separate from anything, that something new.
It was new because it went with the, you know, do unto others you have them do unto you. And I mean, it was a different idea because the kings ruled as chancellors, and it put us in a position, you know, more like slaves than sovereigns. You know, we in America, the sovereignty of the king was supposed to devolve to the people. And of course, they tried to usurp that the day that it was put into place right from the beginning. And hence we have the problems we have today because their fingers were in there. And I think that's one of the things that it was an experiment, and they told us this American experiment. Well, they experimented all right because the bankers were in there. Look, the bankers wanted to get rid of the church, and they wanted to get rid of the kings, and so they were always in there manipulating, as far as I can see, in my opinion.
Well, what we see today, I think, is a new common law appearing, and this is just from my analysis, that today common law can be construed to mean not merely something so broad as to include one completed nationalistic viewpoint, but more of a local thing, or at least it's leaning in the direction of that, which, you know, and so the common law grand jury, since it's a unified common law grand jury involving all members of states, right? And states have citizenship rights in those states. Well, certainly then it's a slight circumvention of the standard theme for which we have elected to preserve our fundamental rights. And this is why I'm asking if you're familiar with the evolution of the common law as opposed to keeping things on such a strict basis, you know, keeping things strictly speaking.
Well, I don't think it was, I think it was actually freeing. I don't think it was strict is what you're saying. I think that the true common law, the way it was supposed to be, every case decided on its own merits. That's where they didn't get to. That's what they got away from. And so I understand that there was this transition and this metamorphosis that went on. But, you know, the discussion we're having here right now is deeper than you would ever get with any lawyer or any judge, because they don't even go there. I mean, what they think of common law, you know, they need an education as far as that goes. They haven't delved into this stuff as much as the average NLA member has. So
I hear you. Can I interject and say that in California, Civil Code Section 22.2, and to just kind of offer a bit of devil's advocacy here, states that the common law of England is the rule of decision in all the courts of this state. And our system is an English system, you know, dating back to kind of an early time. But I think that the thing that separates it from that, and if we want to have a clear, identifiable, you know, nationality, then it would have to be the implementation of something like, you know, the people's ability to be able to just step in and circumvent, you know, or come around, you know, or trump really the government.
And actually, that's the way it should be. And I don't want to get into a big, long discussion here, but this is a good subject as far as, you know, making a statement on this and to how it relates to the common law grand juries. And that's exactly what it is. It's the people's plug-in, because the government should never be able to trump the people in as far as, you know, what their will is, as long as it's not, you know, we don't live in a democracy where mob rules. You know, we live with the will of the people, but under certain guidelines. And they don't even want us to have that today. You know, they don't want us to plug in.
I think they do. I really think they do, actually. I honestly believe that we are being educated. We're not being given a deep education, like what I'm going out and I'm going above and beyond, right? But that's because I have my reasons. But the common law, right, is the Constitution. That's the common law of the country. Mm-hmm. And the common law of your state is your state constitution, and then the common law of your local community is your whatever charter or homeowners association, you know, that you're in. You know, when your law is contract and you know, common law is whatever is the law of the contract. So let's just not forget, you know, that what we're doing is we're really trying to negotiate a new contract. And I think that the people can step up to do that. And there's evidence there that we have capacity to be able to delegate, relegate, you know, initialize, and also begin processes for remedying some of these things. Specifically, I did speak to a judge, Victor Wang, out here, a guy who's running for judge. And he said there was, again, I think last call I mentioned it, there was something that the city was setting up, like a citizens oversight committee or something. It would be sad to see the city, the local, you know, agency arm of the state set up something that would be on the behalf of the people, because they were just so in a slumber, they couldn't step up, you know. And really, this is what it comes down to, from what all of my reading is leading to, is that the citizenry must be accountable and start taking responsibility. Without an educated citizenry, our grand juries on the civil or the common law side, they're meaningless. So thanks for taking my call.
Okay.
You're wrong.
You're welcome. Very good. Yeah, that's good. Thank you very much.
The Constitution says that the citizenry needs to be educated, and they need to be educated, but they are, the citizens are the one that's in control. I mean, we, the people.
Yeah, we're supposed to be in control. And a lot of times they set up these boards, and some of these citizen review boards are to placate the people into feeling like they have a say. Look at this. If you had the common law grand jury in and functioning, you wouldn't need citizen review boards. That is your citizen review board. You know, they give citizen review boards out to police departments that are rogue, and to punish them, they put a citizen's review board in. But what is their power, really? It's not the power of the grand jury. That's the problem. They're citizen review boards with no teeth. And we had people trying to get us to go in that direction early on. Oh, the boards of review, the boards of review. Well, the boards of review cannot indict, and that's a problem. And so, you know, they think that the people are too ignorant or too this or too that, that they don't want us telling them what to do. Look, you give the people the authority and the responsibility, and I think they'll step up to the plate and do just a fine job.
Well, they absolutely will, if the people need educated, then they are to be educated, not taking power away from them.
Exactly. That's right. So, well, we thank you for that. Thank you, Robert. And if that's
okay,
it, we'll move on.
We have emptied the queue from the people that wanted to talk to Brent. So anybody that would like to get into the queue, let's take people who haven't had a question.
Hey, that was Donaldson.
Okay. Oops. Can you hear me? I got bounced off. Anybody hear me now?
Yeah, Jan.
Okay. We do have some people in the queue now. Anybody else would like to sign up, jump in, jump into the queue now? And we have Richard from Iowa. He's our Common Law Advisory Committee.
Yes, can you help? Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Yes, I wanted to make an announcement that the Common Law Advisory Committee has a couple of new pages. And you can find them under the Committee's pull-down tab, and under that, the Common Law Advisory Committee tab. The first new page is the library page, and you can learn the common law the way our founding fathers learned it, from Blackstone's Commentaries on the Laws of England. It's an audiobook, which makes it really easy to listen to. You can just download it, the MP3s, put it in your car player, and listen. Also, there's Kent's Commentaries on American Law. Kent is the American version of Blackstone. He commented on the American law. It's an abridged version, so it's quite a bit shorter, and there are other books in there, too, you can look at. And the other page is the training documents page. There are three useful documents on that page. The first is the primer on the grand jury, common law, natural law, and equity, and it answers the questions, how can the common law be an unwritten law? What are the principles of natural law and equity? And where did equity come from? And what are statutes, among other things? It's just a few items. The second useful document is Understanding Nisi Prius. In the U.S., Nisi Prius is a synonym for a court of original jurisdiction over civil cases held in a local county with one judge and a jury. And I do pretty much overkill in supporting that statement. And the third document is Child Protective Services and Parental Government, How to Apply Natural Law and Principles of the Bible to Restore Parental Government and Take Back Control over Our Children. So that's pretty much all I had for tonight. If you have any comments or questions.
Okay, thank you for that.
I have one announcement, Gerard, if I could.
Go ahead.
We have started project number two for the federal district leaders, as you all know, and that's the Get to Know Your Sheriff. And I posted about four documents on the web page for the leaders wanted. So if you want to download those, they go into calling the sheriff, what to say, what to take with you when you go, what to cover on the first and second visit, and that sort of thing. So if you go to the Leaders Wanted, or if you go just to nationallibertyalliance.org/help-wanted, you can pull those four documents down. Okay.
Okay, thank you. I don't know if we have anybody else in the queue. Again, you'll have to tell me, I can't see.
Well, we have New York Peter. Let's see if he will unmute. New York Peter. New York Peter. New York Peter, the whole board is kind of messed up. I think New York Peter is unmuted. He's showing unmuted. Are you there, Peter?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Are you there?
Yeah,
okay,
finally.
Good. Hey, Jan, before he starts, I'm driving and I might lose you, so I'm, it might be up to you to pick up the slack here, okay?
We're close enough. We'll just shut down if that happens.
Yeah, okay. Just giving you a warning.
Oh, is John back? Okay.
Yeah, I'm back. So, but you can continue controlling the board. I'll just watch. I'll pipe in if I need to.
Okay.
Thank you, John.
Yeah, and also we have we can use some more people in the queue if there's anybody else that wants to say anything tonight.
This is unprecedented. Nobody in the queue, right?
Yep, it is. Yep.
Okay. Did Peter chime in? I thought I heard somebody.
Yes, he's here.
I started too. I'm just enjoying everybody's getting involved. I do have some ideas for committee safety as we're going out there. Of course, you're talking about getting everybody involved, grassroots. If there's an emergency, You know that you can always go to the gun clubs, possibly the firehouses. I suggest possibly we get a pick a citizens band CB radio station that people can communicate. It'll be the emergency station that Committee of Safety will broadcast on. Hopefully ham radios will also get involved. But that would be a really good way to let them know that everybody just, if there's an emergency, if CBs are still working in people's cars, they can translate messages back and forth between firehouses, gun clubs, but certain places that will organize with food, supplies, water. People know that, hey, just get down to, you know, the firehouse or the gun club or wherever and, you know, see if you can help. And then they can, you know, and with that, with the CBs, possibly even a good help in communication. And I figured that might be a good start to even go to the gun club presidents and fire chiefs.
Peter, do you have any background in ham radio?
Not really, but, you know, I just...
Yeah, I don't either, but that is part of our plan. That is part of our plan, and we're going to write that up in a generic way. But anybody who really understands how the radio process works on ham radios, maybe they might want to draw up a plan, a proposal, get it to us, and we'll post it for others so that we can kind of work across the nation in communications, because that is part of our plan. And we're going to have to, you know, I got to believe that there is probably someone with a ham radio in every county across America, or at least every few counties. But, you know, I've met quite a few people from different counties that have ham radios. And those people, the Committee of Safety need to seek those people out. Those people are already thinking of survival. They're thinking of emergencies. That's what they're doing, what they're doing for. So to connect with that individual, to invite them to the Committee of Safety, to ask them to become a member, to ask them to teach them to... You know, what kind of you know, units should we have? We should have probably some kind of a receiver at minimum. Everyone should have a receiver at minimum. And, you know, what's a good one? Where would we go to get that? What kind of prices would it be? You know, let's look to the people who know about these things. So anybody who really knows about ham radios and thinks they can write a paper on this and to give everybody sort of an idea on what needs to be done, that'd be helpful. And that's true with anything. You know, anybody that would want to write a paper of information on ideas on what the Committee of Safety might want to do and work out certain resolutions and apply these things to assist them and so on and so forth.
I want to speak to the ham radio thing just real specifically, because there is a movement going on in the counties right now, in New York anyway, and I'm sure that, you know, your disaster preparedness groups know this. Recently, well, in the past 2 years, there has been money put aside for the volunteer fire departments, who really are your first responders in any emergency. They offered to put a free ham radio and the antenna and everything in every firehouse, because the last, you know, in 9/11 and during Katrina, the only ones who got out were the ham radios. And we have a fellow here that's a big ham radio guy, and he went out, and he was out for almost 24 hours straight relaying calls up in a high area. He set up and he was handling the communications for the whole county and relay them through the state. Now, you could buy a ham radio today that will get out, and it doesn't cost you any more than a CB. What the ham radio guys have done on their own, there's a repeater system that goes all around the country. And actually, there's some that go all around the world. Now, what a repeater is, it's a tower in a high place. And you don't need a real powerful radio to hit that repeater. But that repeater is a powerful radio. And they're running them on solar power. And so they're up all the time. They never will go down. And you can hit that repeater with your radio. And you can even, there's a link between the repeater. So you can take a little radio, and if you know the repeater system, you can talk all the way from New York to North Carolina on the repeater system. So this is a great thing that's happened over the past, you know, with the new technology that's coming out. We have a repeater system in the United States that's very high tech.
You don't they call that the trunk?
I don't know if they call that the trunk or not, to tell you the truth.
Because I know 911 is all connected and it's national and runs through the trunk system. They got the local fire departments that come in and out of that system. And so
yeah, but I think that's separate. The ham radio is a citizens radio. Now, you know, they're not really hooked up to like a 911, but the new technology that they have now, that because you can run them through computers and you can dial on telephones, and there's all kinds of things you can do today that you couldn't do even 5 years ago or 10 years ago, you know. So there, I mean, I haven't kept up on it. I am a ham radio ham. I have my first license. And the other thing I want to say is, even though you're required to have a federal FCC license to talk on a ham radio, anybody can buy one. You don't have to have a license to buy one. And the law says that in an emergency, anybody can talk on it if it's an emergency. Look, if it's an emergency, you can talk on a police radio. If the car's out there and it's cracked up or something, you can pick up that microphone and you can call for help. And that doesn't violate any law. It's an emergency. So people should not be afraid to buy ham radios because they don't have a license. You know, you can listen on it, and if you have a licensed ham in the house, anybody in, you know, that can supervise other people without licenses are allowed to talk on it. You know, there's some etiquette that you have to learn, you know, and you're supposed to announce your call sign every so many, you know, minutes or whatever, twice in an hour or whatever it is, sign it off. Very simple rules. And what I found on the ham radio, they're really good people. They're very, very respectful. You know, there's no bad language tolerated or anything like that. And there's a lot of stuff that goes on all day long on ham radios. It's very interesting. And like I said, it will not go down in an emergency. They got solar panels running these repeaters, and they put them in the firehouses now. And the reason they did that is so that And the next time there's an emergency, this guy doesn't have to get in his trailer, run up to the top of a mountain, and sit there for 24 hours relaying everybody's conversations. Now we can go between firehouse to firehouse, and we'll never lose communications. And the other thing is it's not going to just be fire. It's going to be police, ambulance. Everybody's going to be using those frequencies. So you'll always know what's going on with that, which is really good. You know, the people can listen and know everything that's going on in an emergency.
So it seems logical that each county would want to look around for people who are already into this system and invite them to join the Committee of Safety and work with those who want to get more involved in that part of it. I do know about the trunk. I bought a radio from Radio Shack, and I was talking with those people about the kind of radio that, you know, I wanted to listen in to see what was going on in the neighborhood, and I don't really get much of a chance to do that, but years ago I did, and I still have this radio system, and it's a scanner, and it's set up for the 911 system, and basically, you know, they assign different channels for, you know, different frequencies for different emergency services, and then if you get the scanner system, it moves from police, ambulance, fire, and others. They even have emergency stations that become more of a statewide thing or a national thing. But I guess as you move around from town to town, you know, you're picking up the different frequencies for those towns, however all that works, I have no clue. But people should consider that. It was a relatively cheap item, and it could give you an idea of what's going on around you in a time of an emergency, you know, because you'll pick up the police, you'll pick up the fire department and the ambulances and so on. And even if military comes in, I think you might even pick some of that stuff up. I don't know. But definitely this idea with, you know, the radio system that people are really involved with. What was it called again? The,
The Citizens Band?
No, the one you're talking about. I don't know why I can't.
Yeah, it's ham radio. It's
ham
citizens
radio. Ham radio, that's it.
Yeah.
So the ham radio people need to do. And which leads me to realize we need to contact our fire departments. And look at, you know, every town usually has their own fire department. And if you got, you know, like I'll use Dutchess County as an example. We have 19 towns and two cities. So we have 21, societies, so to speak, or, you know, towns and cities. And each one of them have a fire department. And we should.
Or they can have, some of them have two or three, depending on the size of the town. their fire district.
You need to connect with the chief and maybe invite him or his lieutenant or someone that's a representative and invite all the firemen. Look, at they're into the emergency service stuff. So they would be ideal for this kind of thing
It's a no-brainer. Look at your fire departments. They already have communications. They already have a command. They have ranks. They
right,
got emergency
the
equipment.
Their own also.
Oh, they do. But look, I'm in the fire department. Those guys are all got local guys. They are part of the militia. Make no mistake about it. They're local. They're volunteers, and so they are, and they're able-bodied.
That is the other thing we need to teach the people of them of the that develop these committees of safeties, that we the people are the militia. Let's define the militia for them. You know, we can go back to see what Benjamin Franklin said. There are other times in history other people had made statements or laws, and right now there is a code concerning who and what the militia is. I'll have to look that up. But, you know, we should define that for them. And once we define it, they'll understand that I'm the militia. Okay, we all are the militia. And so, therefore, we should be prepared in this and working with the fire department and working with the sheriff and working with the town boards. You know, we need to tie into all of our town boards and develop a relationship with them and a no-nonsense relationship with them. We should let them know. And another important thing we're going to put up there, look at, we as a grand jury, the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury, which of course is separate from National Liberty Alliance, but of course we use National Liberty Alliance as the place to organize, communicate, to educate, and so on. But the thing is that we do have a seal, and a seal gives some authority, okay, and it makes a point. So even all these committees, we're going to put up a suggested design. People can do whatever they want, but keep ego out of it, stay focused on what we're doing, and let's, create a seal. And when you make communications with a board, a town board, you can give them a copy of a resolution concerning things they're doing. You know, you go in and you discover what they're doing, you talk to them, and you just get information the first time around, I would imagine, is the best way to go. Then you come back, you go back together, and you develop a resolution concerning the problems. Maybe they're playing around with Agenda 21, Common Core, and all that garbage. And then you come back with your resolution, you put a seal on it and cover letter, and you should have a nice little cover letter. We'll put some ideas out for that too. And then they can apply their power and authority as we the people and enforce them to do what has to be done. And if they're breaking the Constitution, like taking money from foreign sources, that's against the law. And we can go to the sheriff and talk to him about that and say, hey, look, you got to figure this out and understand the law and go fix this problem because you got to apply it. We're going to report the crime. You got to fix it. And it's not that people need to go to jail for these things. They need to learn what the law is and start behaving themselves. And if it doesn't get fixed, they can go get. They can come to us and get a. We can get involved. We can write a letter to begin with, and also at some point in time, the local grand juries will be in gear, and they will be able to do an indictment if necessary. But once they start communicating, I'm sure they'll take them serious and fix their problems. But I think even with the sheriff, but I think with the board alone, you know, the Committee of Safety alone. Oh, someone locked the conference?
Not me.
Who
I
locked
didn't touch a
conference?
Thing. You want me to unlock it?
Nope. Everybody, I'll just click the button. Unlocked. Yeah. Okay.
Strange things going on.
Yeah, I'm telling you. What's his name? Casper must be in here tonight. Huh?
Yep, the ghost.
Yeah. But anyway, we're going to put a lot of ideas out, but the people need to come up with ideas. People should think about this stuff, study this stuff, come up with ideas, propose them, to put them up for other people to see, and they'll either jump on them or they don't. But again, this connection of bringing all this together, you know, I dare to say also the local police, but, you know, bear in mind, the local police really don't have a place in a common law nation. They really don't have a place. I mean, maybe in a closed community or something, you know, private community, okay, fine. But generally speaking, and what drives the local police ultimately is tickets. I mean, they and putting people in jail because there's money that comes to the town, money fed to the police department, and then there's federal funding, I'm sure, from that too. But a lot of it is generated from local ticketing. And so they're doing things that are evil onto people, you know, ultimately, in order to earn monies, in order to run these local police departments. Once we, you know, kind of shut them down, they will eventually close down because they're going to have to tell the people when they come in there that they don't have to participate. Look at if there's an injury and they break the law, then they need to go into a court of law. And we have county courts and we have, you know, the New York, in our case, you know, in all cases, you have the state courts. We have two courts. One's the state court, which is in the county. And then, of course, there's the county court. So there are two courts of law. You know, we don't really need town courts. What do we need town courts for? They're filled usually with ticket things, you know, people getting tickets. But in any event, a lot of this stuff is not necessary. It's a waste of money and it injures people. And people will have to figure that out on their local level. The sheriff's department may have to grow a little bit, but that's understandable. And they can take on the, you know, whatever good is coming out of the local police forces that are shutting down because they can't afford to keep their courts open anymore because they're not running tickets or they can't run tickets. But anyway, we need to bring all these people together, the town, the militia, even the militia. You know, they got to seek out the militia or find a militia nearby in another county and talk with them to help you to establish an unorganized militia while we are working with the governor at some point in time. You know, when you get enough counties in, you come together as a whole, you know, and you put the pressure on the governor. You need to be doing what you need to be doing. You need to be supporting these militias. Ultimately, Congress should be doing that. But if Congress isn't, then the governor needs to take this and deal with this problem and talk with the legislature. So, anyway.
Okay. New York Peter, did you have anything further?
No, I think just a comment back that I think the Committee of Safety can actually just say, hey, you need to, and I think they'll just help out by saying to, like I say, fire department, you have to have a representative that will report to. Gun clubs, you have to have a representative that reports to. And just tell them, look, please have a representative report to this Committee of Safety for emergencies.
Well, I think not that they need to report to the Committee of Safety, but that they should participate and become partners with the committee. We always do it in a friendly way, become partners, because we want those people to be partners. We want to be pals with them. We want to get to know each other. We want to use each other's resources in times of trouble. You know, we do bartering. You know, you give your all, whatever it is that you do, and the next guy gives their all, whatever it is that they do, whatever their expertise is, and then we have all of the necessary things we need to survive as a society. So, but yeah, you know, we need to make contact with them. And I'll tell you what, remember all of these different organizations that we're talking about and different, even government agencies are there for the purpose to deal with emergency situations. And that's what the Committee of Safety is doing, is preparing. We don't need FEMA to make a plan for us. We don't need the federal government to make some kind of plan to protect us. We, the people of the militia, will protect ourselves, and we'll tell them to take a hike. Don't come into our county. And if all our counties in our state say that, they'll keep out of our state. And guess what? We don't have a problem, do we? Don't come into our state. And if one county has a problem and it turns bad, you know, the counties around can respond and assist that county like they should, the state as a whole, and do whatever they have to do, because times may get kind of wacky. Hopefully, we'll be able to get into the courts and bring sanity back into our political process and into the judicial process, and it'll prevent any of these crazy people from coming in with their organized crime of destruction.
Maybe a PowerPoint presentation that we can put right on the public access channels right away. That's really inexpensive. I think it might even be free.
For what? For the Committee of Safety?
Committee of Safety, just saying.
Yeah, we just put one up. Put one up. So it's a matter of fact, I'm kind of surprised it was. We wanted to keep it short. We wanted to keep it under 30 minutes, and it turned out to be, I think it's 20, 25 minutes or something, 26?
22, I think, yeah.
22 minutes. And let me tell you something. We cover it all. I think we got everything in there, didn't we? I mean, we got a lot of stuff in there, and we did it in 20-some-odd minutes. And I think it's powerful. I think it's enticing. I think it's drawing. I think it's like whoever listens to that says, I want one of them in my community. I need one. I want one in my community.
Excellent.
People, we the people need to do this. This is a very, very important part of the project. And when we the people come together, you know, we're going to empower each other. And just think, at that point, we will reach critical mass to go in and take back our judicial process, to go in and take back local government back, to go in and take Washington, D.C., which, you know, Washington, D.C. is controlled by foreigners. We, the people, have no control in Washington anymore. The Congress is not controlled by the people. They're controlled by special interest groups. The president's not controlled by we, the people. He's controlled by an oligarchy. And the president seems to control Congress, and he controls the judiciary. Look what you look at. The president controls all of these federal agencies. They all answer to his administration ultimately. Okay, they work for the president, most of these agencies, and they respond to different things. And you know, this administration sent the necessary forces out to Oregon to do what they did, and they did their evil on Lavoie-Finicum, and that comes right from the top. Okay, they knew it, and they knew they'd have the control of the judiciary, that they would be protected. They knew that they would have control of the locals. I mean, when I was watching this as it unfolded, and especially after Lavoie was killed, assassinated is the proper word for that. After that happened, especially these different press conferences were happening, I started to see the face of this sheriff change tremendously. I mean, I think he at that point in time understood, I'm in bed with the devil, because he got involved in an assassination, and he got suckered in. And look, it tells us everything. They worked so hard to get that sheriff on their side. Why is that? Because they still fear the sheriff, and they still know what the law is. And when the people start pressing it, they're in trouble. And we, the people, are starting to press it, and they are in trouble.
Well, just on one other note for the positive side for the Republic, that the fact that Neil Kanin had mentioned it means that there might be something to watch this week. It might actually have something more than a psyops to it. So go good, guys. That's all I can say.
Right. Well, I'll tell you, we've pretty much come to the end. But before we end, I just want to quickly go back to what we read, the Bible verses that we had read earlier, which I think was Leviticus 26. I'm just running through this quickly to see where we were. But yeah, it was Leviticus 26, and you know, we're not going to accomplish this thing on our own. We're expecting the governor of the universe to take care of things. We just need to do the right thing. But you know what he tells us here: if you walk in my statutes and keep my commandments, he's going to bless us with the rain, with the fruits, with the crops, with everything we need. And he's also going to bless us with protection. He's going to bless us, you know, 5 will chase 100, and 100 will chase 10,000. And that's the power of God, because he controls the minds of evil men. And so we need to understand that we, the people, need to step up, and we need to do what has to be done. And if we do the right thing, these people still fear us, and they still fear the sheriff, because they're not totally in control yet. They're working real hard to do it, but they haven't done it yet. So, but with that, we have come to the end of our evening, and we'll be back next Monday. And please, look at this Thursday. Be at this Thursday's meeting. We're going to talk about a lot of things, and we're going to be pushing the Committee of Safety. Please make the Committee of Safety video go viral. Email everybody you know relentlessly. Get this out there. Get the people to see and understand what's going on. Take this to your local liberty groups. I am going to be making phone calls this week to different local liberty groups that I know that are close by, and I'm going to ask them for me to be able to come out and give them an hour's presentation. I'll show the video for a half hour or 20-some-odd minutes, and I'll answer questions for the rest of that time period. It's only 45 minutes. Let's get the people involved. Let's do what has to be done. With that, Lord bless everyone, and we'll see you next time.
let's say an open.
God be merciful unto us and bless us and cause his face to shine upon us, that thy way may be known upon earth, thy saving help among all nations. Let the people.